Welcome to this Around the Corner podcast. Today is Monday, January 26, 2009. This is your host, Miguel Gulen. On Monday and Tuesday of this week, I had the chance to attend the TASA 2009 Midwinters Conference in Austin, Texas. I was captivated by some of the session titles, disappointed in others that focused on high-stakes test prep, and brought along a school district to co-present with them. And others that I wished I could attend but couldn't because you just can't be in two or three places at the same time. In this podcast, recorded Monday, January 26, I had a chance to listen to Cypress Fairbanks ISD's Dr. David Anthony, Harold Rowe, as well as two other folks whose names I don't recall. It was a special treat to sit in on this session because Dr. David Anthony was my superintendent when I worked in Mount Pleasant Independent School District. I remembered him with a shock of red hair and found he had lost that hair in the intervening years. He quipped that I had some gray hair in mine. And, well, that's true. Fortunately, the years have not diminished Dr. Anthony's humor and enthusiasm, and that came across as he highlighted main points in this very detailed presentation on disaster recovery. Although you can find my notes for this session online, I encourage you to listen carefully since this presentation is brimming with wisdom and good tips worth putting into practice in schools. As always, you can find my notes online at mguhlin.net/share. That's the Share More Wiki, and look for Miguel's notes. I hope you enjoy this presentation as much as I did listening to it.
Good morning. I don't think I need the mic. I'm David Anthony. I'm superintendent of Cypress Fairbanks Independent School District. And I'm going to be joined. Actually, I'm going to do what any good superintendent does. And I'm going to get this thing started and leave and let competent people handle the presentation who actually did all the work that you're going to hear about today. And the other reason is I was double committed by TASA to do a presentation at the same time on the Business Visioning Institute. But I'm joined today by Harold Rowe, Associate Superintendent for Technology and School Services, which means that he covers our custodial staff, our transportation, and technology. We just try to find him enough to do. Pam Wells, Associate Superintendent for Facilities, Construction, and Community Partnerships. Tony Barcelona, who works for Harold Rowe, Assistant Superintendent for School Services. And then Roy Sprague, who is Assistant Superintendent of Facilities and Construction, is our resident architect and in charge of all the facilities in our district as far as the construction part. Pam also supervises maintenance. So these four people were integral to the response that we had to Hurricane Ike. What we're going to present to you today is just about dealing with an issue that has a tremendous magnitude of destruction, but it's not nearly what folks on the coast went through. We're not Galveston ISD, and we're certainly not High Island. Paul was at High Island, superintendent, and what Anahuac, High Island, Galveston dealt with is significantly different from what we dealt with. We were 100 miles inland, approximately. But we still had devastation, and it required emergency preparation and recovery and repatriation, essentially, because we did lose power to all of our 100 facilities. We lost 7 instructional days and 6 staff days. So when that occurs, whether it's a tornado or whether it's a major disaster of a fire of a facility, a school facility, or whether it's a railway disaster with chemical spills or even a chemical company, you have to respond. You have to have an emergency preparation plan, disaster recovery plan, and you have to be able to implement short notice. Because honestly, a lot of our folks got lulled to sleep when we had Katrina and Rita. Because we had all this hype, we missed 4 days of school, and my folks who live in northwestern Louisiana got a lot more wind and damage and rain than we did. I sat out by the pool, and it was going about 15 miles an hour when Katrina came through and Rita, and my folks were getting hammered. And northwest Louisiana, 100 mile an hour wind and rain, it was very difficult. So a lot of our folks kind of got lulled to sleep. The next thing they knew, they hung around, and I came in with a vengeance. And we lost power in all our schools. Now, our our district is the 31 largest, according to American School University, we're the 31st largest school district in the nation. We have about 101,000 kids. We have about 13,000 employees, about 100 facilities, 78 or 80 schools, and how many schools do we have? 78 schools. We're only 3 or 4 years, hard to keep up. But about 100 school facilities. And so we found out we had no power in a short time Saturday when the hurricane hit. And so Sunday morning we had an emergency board meeting. But you'll hear all about that. With we grow by about, well, right now we're in a low for the economy and everything. We're only growing about 4,000 to 4,200 students a year. It's been about 6,000 to 6,500 3 years prior to last year. But when you have a district that is, and we are subject to any other disasters like anyone else in the country, but you have to have a plan. And we've gone through an emergency response drill and developed an emergency plan a year or so earlier. And we had never been tested on it. You run a drill, you know, it's not like you make a mistake. It's not that big a deal on a drill. But when you make an error in judgment, or when you don't have enough information, or you don't have contact with people, and you don't have a plan, you don't have a contingency about where kids go to school, if they go to school, how long they're going to be out, how do you contact your staff, then you got a problem. And so what we found that emergency preparedness and the emergency response plan that we had paid huge dividends for us. And so today what we're going to do is from perspective of, even though you're not the eye of the storm, even though you're not the hardest hit, you may have residual damage and you may lose school day. You may have to communicate. We have about 800,000 people who live within the boundaries of our school district. And so when those 800,000 people, our taxpayers, have about 100,000 kids, you can imagine they're not accustomed to having those kids at home during the school year, even though when they're supposed to go back to work and communication was an issue. So Pam and Roy and Tony and Harold are going to talk to you about all those factors that we had to deal with and then creating an emergency response plan that works. And if we can be a benefit to you, then so be it. It's one of those things where you learn the hard way. The lessons that we learned, we want to share, and we would be happy to answer any questions when we finish. But this time, I'm going to turn it over to Roy Sprague, and I'll be slipping out. It's not because I'm bored. Please don't leave me because I do, because I have to make another presentation here briefly.
Thank you, David. Welcome, everybody. Just a couple of quick facts about Hurricane Ike. It came online onshore, I think, Friday afternoon on September 12th, hit the Galveston Gulf Coast area, and then worked its way into the Houston area later that evening and the next morning. And some of the facts are, you know, it came in as a Category 2 hurricane with sustained winds anywhere from 100 to 120 miles per hour. And I can tell you, living in Houston and living through a couple of hurricanes, we had 120 mile an hour winds up on the northwest side of town, about 100 miles inland. And the Galveston area had a storm surge of about 15 feet. There was reported deaths of 164, as well as 202 are still missing as of this time, with a total estimated damage to date of $27 billion of damages in the United States, and making it one of the worst storms from a damage assessment standpoint. As you can see on the left slide there, that's the path the eye took. It came in on the east side of Galveston Island through Galveston Bay, just to the west of Bolivar Peninsula, and then worked its way up into the Houston area. And this was one of the largest area storms. It engulfed pretty much a lot of the Gulf of Mexico. It was very widespread. Here's some before and after photographs of the Galveston area. As you see, the top photograph, there's some arrows there pointing to some structures there, and if you look at the bottom picture, September 15th, the after results and what the coastline looked like. And the same thing on the right-hand side, just two pictures of the devastation that the Galveston area received, as well as Bolivar Peninsula and so forth. Now what I'll do is just take you through some of the pictures that we experienced in Cypher ISD. Again, as David said, we're nowhere near the damages of our coastal areas, but we did get widespread damage. And when you have damage out of 100 facilities, power outages, etc., it's pretty widespread, and we had a lot to do in a very short period of time. Picture on the left-hand side is one of our high schools that was actually under construction our contractor didn't secure the brick wall very well that he was working on, and we lost that entire brick wall. Had a whole bunch of water coming in. You can see the ceiling tiles on the right-hand side. Sorry, the picture's a little bit dull here. And we had ceiling come in. That the whole music area of that building was underwater, and we had a lot of significant damage. The bottom photographs of another project we had under construction. We weren't working in this area, but our library area and then the area on the right side was also significantly damaged. It was a construction area. Some more pictures of water coming into the building through our doors, portable buildings, had a bunch of water by them. And we had a lot of widespread damage throughout the site. We had a lot of portable buildings. We have 278 portable buildings in our district. Have a lot of walkway canopies going from the main building to those portables, and our portable building canopies did not withstand the wind. We pretty much had damages at every campus we had portable buildings at. The bottom left photograph is our recycling center, and basically we lost the metal roof just about on that. And then we had some pictures of widespread damage with our fencing. We had a lot of tree damage in our district. Just another sample photographs. We have a lot of tall pine trees in our district on the northwest side of Houston, and our grounds crew spent an enormous amount of time trying to clean up trees that were in our bus driveways, parent drop-off areas, and so forth to be able to get ready for school. We even had one of our goal posts that was actually damaged and twisted that we had to basically reinstall. And we had some signage. A lot of our marquee signs throughout the district were damaged. And again, widespread damage with all our portable buildings. We also experienced some water coming inside the building. We had several gym floors that we had to go in and basically tear sections out and redo. And then the photograph on the bottom right, we were very fortunate. We had very minimal roof damage in our district. Considering the amount of winds that we had, we've invested very heavily in the type of roof system we put in our district, and I think as a result it has proven to be able to live through a storm like this. The damage we experienced is where we had roof vents and fans and other mechanical devices on the roof that actually were blown over and then skipped along the roof and actually tore some of the membranes up. But the actual membranes were attached very securely, and we really didn't have any buildings that we had any major uplift or anything, so we actually had minor roof repairs, but we had repairs we had to do at 100 buildings throughout the district.
Your roof type is what?
We use a modified bitumen system over lightweight concrete deck, all mechanically fastened. Here's some other photographs of some of the roof issues we're dealing with and some minor tree damage, but as you saw in the previous photograph, we had a lot of tall pine trees everywhere, and when you had those blocking your bus driveways and hitting power lines and all the other things, it was extensive in terms of what we had to deal with to get facilities ready. Here's just some other samples of some of the damage we had. We had a lot of roof flashings around the buildings getting pulled off, and obviously that wouldn't impact us opening school, but it was damage we had to get fixed. The photograph on the right-hand side is several weeks after, as we started cleaning up all the damage on our sites, and we have an exhibit center that we had some land area there, and we basically had a pile the debris up over there to get them off of our campuses to make our campuses safe. We had a lot of little play structures and canopy-type structures that PTOs had funded throughout the district, and we had a lot of those damage as well. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Harold Rowe. He'll talk about our disaster plan.
Thank you, Roy. As Dr. Anthony said, we feel like that our prior preparation helped us get through and help us recover as fast as we did from this hurricane. Through his leadership and support, actually, we began the effort in 2005, or what you could just say. One of the things I manage is technology, and I have a natural interest in what happens if the technology doesn't work. It's my worst fear. I'm knocking on wood somewhere here. So we started this effort focused on two things, really, IT, and then we expanded that scope to say what happened if the central office went away. All right, so that narrow focus. And from that, we were able to leverage those processes, and we're suggesting to you, this is just the tack that we took, but we argued that y'all might be able to take advantage of an approach like that. So we started at IT, looked at central office, and then used the things that y'all know about well. Institutional knowledge of crisis management. All of you have campus plans dealing with crisis. We learned from that wisdom, rolled out of the plan, and as you know now, the state's mandated emergency operations plan. We tucked that plan inside the state-mandated emergency operations plan. So that's how all that stuff glues together right now. Next one. And during the planning process, we discovered three key components. Teams. You know that as you manage your own teams. Communication is essential in terms of planning for the disaster. And then ultimately, you have to practice and you have to do some preparation. With respect to teams, the way we're structured, is, again, just our structure, there's a recovery management team, which consists of the senior managers in the school district. In our district, Dr. Anthony manages that team. His direct reports constitute the recovery management team. They have overall responsibility for implementing the assessment and the recovery. A natural consequence of running the district, obviously. Significantly there at the bottom, the notion of an alternate leader. If he's down and we can't get to him, we've got plans in place for his deputy or another senior manager to assume that role. So as you think through that, be aware that the leader may not be around for whatever reason. That's one team. Another key team, and this is where all the heavy lifting is done, damage assessment and recovery. As you might expect, it's your key operational managers who get it done every day. The engineers, architects, operations, maintenance people that know the extent of our mechanical systems, can assess their damage with help from others and start getting the thing recovered. Again, you see there's a team leader and an alternate there. Members on that team, Mr. Sprague, Mr. Barcelona, are members of that team, and they have an overall responsibility for the recovery of the physical damage. And then, not lastly, but thirdly, an administrative support team, because to make all that stuff happen, right, you have to acquire assets, you have to give resources, you have to provision them for those teams. Food, shelter, all those kinds of things have to be provisioned. That's that team's responsibility. So we've got purchasing leadership in that area. We have administrative and logistical leadership in that area to provision resources. Down to where are people going to go? The central office is down. We literally got to where can we house central office administrators if the central office goes down? That support team provisions those and keeps track of that. Thank you. With respect to communication, we found, as you all know, multiple modes are essential. Telephone, obviously inbound and outbound. Many of you have calling systems. Those were critical to us in Ike and continue to be important to us. Outbound outreach to our patrons. The website, email, and media. On the email side, it's important, we felt, to have an alternate service for email. We have that stage. We have that ready. All the administrators and key disaster recovery people have alternate email addresses by a third-party provider in case your own system is down. Just food for thought. Pre-stage templates means this. In the middle of a crisis, you get something out of the media. It takes a long time for five people to write something. So we use the downtime to construct something, a template, right, where you literally have done a lot of the pre-thinking, and you plug in the name of the disaster. It's not as easy as that. But we want you to think about, as we were asked to think about, getting some of this stuff staged and ready to go. Because in the crisis, who knows what's going to be said in the media. You have to measure that and make sure the word gets out, both to employees and to our patrons.
Carol, spend just a minute about the telephone system, the emergency notification system.
Okay.
So they understand what you're talking
sure.
about.
Sure. We have something we've styled an event notification system. Y'all know it maybe as reverse 911. So many have that now, but we use that fairly intensely to talk to our parents and to our employees over the course of the disaster. Don't have a backup per se for that. We were lucky enough to have that facility up and running, and we actually have a third-party provider who does it. So we suggest that to you. If your phone systems are down, you might want to think about having a third-party administrator who would actually make those calls for you, and that's exactly what we did. And we had staged those voice calls prior to the storm, so that we could call and, again, reduce the reaction time. Call the vendor and say, launch message one to this address group. So as much, the notion here is pre-prep and using as many communications facilities as you can.
You felt like that reached your clientele. And obviously, not all of them were going to be able to receive that message.
Right.
Did that feel for whether or not that the majority of your kids were receiving that?
We felt unquestionably that it absolutely reached our patrons and our employees. We capture a number of phone numbers out of our student information system. So we might call you as a parent four times. We may hit your cell phone, your work phone, your business line, your landline, any line we can get you that you've offered to us. In that model of an outreach, an emergency outreach, we're going to call that number.
We reached a number of our staff members and parents in Austin and Dallas. They got the notification.
And email. So the notion is as many shots as we can get at getting to you via email or these multiple outreaches on the cell side or phone side would.
You had the third party set up prior to this.
Correct.
Correct.
And we use that system, obviously, to do PTO fundraising. The schools use them for a number of outreach initiatives. but it's also leverageable into a sort of a catastrophic emergency notification.
The range at Barbers Hill, so he got hit pretty hard.
Yeah. Does your district have satellite phones? That's something we looked at because we just had, man, we couldn't even text.
I agree. We have not invested. I know I'm from Calcasieu Parish. I know that technology person there, they've got sat phones now. It's just something we haven't bought into yet, but we may have to.
Dave, I'm just going to have to cover this.
We were able to text, and you're right. Sometimes the cell towers get down, and we heard the theme of conscripted bandwidth even to reduce or free up their channels. So best effort, and we thought it was very comprehensive and effective. And then lastly, technology. I mean, tools are important. So broadband cards and laptops for people so they can communicate. Even if our systems are down, we can maybe get to third-party email addresses and those kinds of things. Provisioning tools for those administrators are important.
We received a number of complimentary messages after this thing. We got back up and running from parents and patrons and employees who said that they never felt they'd lost communication. So we got a lot of compliments on the communication efforts that we made. Not saying we got everybody everywhere, you understand all that, but that was something we received praise from the community about.
They felt like they were informed because of those multiple media shots. Two quick key concepts. We pre-staged resources. So there are kits. There are kits for, you see, that's representative of some of the materials. Lighting, portable lighting, batteries, plastic sheeting, disposable suits for our hazmat teams. All that stuff is pre-staged in areas where they know to get them. So they go and get those resources and they have them. So we're not looking around for stuff like that. And then lastly, y'all know, practice. We did, like y'all do. You do tabletops. But significantly, one time we used only our cell phones. It doesn't really represent, a true outage like a hurricane where cell phone capacity may be limited. But it does simulate you can't use your landlines. So all of our disaster teams were in disparate locations, and we were managing the mock as if we were in different locations using only our cell phones. And there are warrants with that, and we're trying to, tune that as well. But the point is you practice that so that when it happens, you're at least used to that notion. And again, alternate location, because one of our weaknesses were we were targeted to a specific recovery location where we would all meet, and we had no power there, so we went to an alternate location and planned for that. So two locations, just like you have an alternate leader for those teams, alternate command post location. Thank you. I'd like to introduce Tony Barcelona, who's going to talk about IT-specific stuff that we did in terms of preparation.
Good morning. One of our ancillary departments would be our transportation facility, and what we did in preparing for Ike is that we always go and turn our buses nose to nose underneath our barns. We have a shed or a barn at each one of our four facilities. In doing so, at the close of business of that day that we all got out, we wanted to make sure our buses, our white fleet, and generators were all topped off with fuel. We also wanted to make sure that our fuel storage tanks at all four centers were full from our vendor. We stayed in contact with them during that particular week to make sure that they were able to bring us fuel to make sure that everything was topped off. And we also wanted to make sure that our emergency contact, our phone trees were updated at each center so that our directors, assistant directors, could get back with these specific people that we needed to so that we would have a updated phone line to contact them. From an operations standpoint, we wanted to make sure, custodial, we want to make sure that we can secure some of the equipment on the outside of the buildings. We may have some exterior trash cans that may be out there. We wanted to bring them inside, and we coordinated a lot of that with our maintenance and grounds. We wanted to make sure our supply inventories were taken in the building in case we had to fall back on our purchasing and distribution center to assist us. We also wanted to update our responder information. We always assign one custodian to report back to that campus after the storm or disaster has taken place to assist us in beginning that evaluation. We also, in our department, in maintenance department, we have emergency equipment centralized. We've gone through the process of buying some blowers, some dehumidifiers. We even converted a 17-passenger bus into our emergency vehicle, which is ready to advance and go on any moment, along with maintenance also having some additional equipment as well as far as blowers and dehumidifiers and vacs. So we felt like we were very prepared typically you're not experiencing or thinking you're going to be dealing with every campus within your district, but we were. Operations as well, we want to make sure that our contract services were contacted so that we could take care of waste management or recycling or elevator type vendors that we deal with.
Tony, let me interrupt one.
Yes, sir.
You just said something extremely important. It doesn't have to be a massive issue involving every campus. This can be used for just having one campus where you still have kids can't come to school and employees can't come to school and work. So it works on the smaller level of a campus, but also the entire district.
Our maintenance department, also we want to make sure that they went out and make sure all clearances of all of our roof drains were taken care of, tie down of any outdoor stored materials. They double-checked all of our playgrounds, made sure that they had those secured and tied, and then any anything to do with building materials and supplies and their inventories were also taken care of. I'll turn it back over now to Roy.
Thank you, Tony. Well, knowing the storm was coming in, part of the pre-planning we did is we scheduled meetings with our district support team and our district leadership team. Dr. Anthony had the foresight to gather everybody together as we monitored the storm in advance of it. And then we established a location that we were all going to meet after the storm. And we even had plans in place for a scheduled conference call in case people could not make access to the central facility that we were scheduled to be at. We included all our central administrators, our disaster management and recovery teams, our principals, our directors of curriculum instruction, and all the other support directors we had throughout the district were called together to discuss what our game plan was in terms of being ready and what we were planning on doing after the storm. Once the storm hit, we were fortunate that our security department as well as the law enforcement agencies that we were contracted with actually were doing assessments as they were driving around through the storm. And they actually started preparing a documented list of where some of the critical areas were and started doing that and they started recording it back at their security center where our officers come in and they're changing shifts. And once the storm came through and we started having trouble getting communication, you know, people were trying each other through cell phone, we couldn't get a hold of anybody. First message I got was through a text message, and it was from our director of maintenance, and all it said was, help, come to the security center. So we all started working our way to the security center to take a look, so what did we have? The thing that was really critical, and it really helped us out tremendously, was the fact that our security department and law enforcement had a list waiting for us when we got in there, and as we assembled our teams together, it gave us a very quick snapshot of what problems we were seeing so we can immediately put some of the plans we had in place. Some of the other things we did, we contacted our architects, our contractors we had underway, as well as any consultants, mainly a roof consultant, and we had all their emergency numbers, contact information, and we had that all prearranged, and that was already with us so that as soon as we were called in and have to start the recovery operation, we immediately got on the phone to call the contacts and text them however we could get a hold of them so they could come and meet at our central place so we can start assembling and directing people what we need to go look at. One of the things we did is that once we had the initial report, Dr. Anthony scheduled a quick conference call with our Board of Trustees, and we gave the board a quick initial report of the assessment of the damage we known at that point in time. And from there, we scheduled on Sunday morning, September 14th, an emergency meeting with our Board of Trustees, and we assembled them to basically obtain the authorization we needed to go into and enter into contracts, purchase orders, whatever we had to do in order to get the school district back together. And that was a very critical component so that it allowed us to move forward and take care of things and do it legally and not have to worry about issuing purchase orders and all those other things that without going through the proper bid process. We put up here just a suggested wording. This is the wording we actually use with our board. Basically said the Board of Trustees will consider authorizing the superintendent or his designee to negotiate and execute any and all agreements, contracts, and or purchase orders necessary to remediate and or repair damage to district property, personal property, and or infrastructure caused by Hurricane Ike, and to seek on the district's behalf any and all insurance proceeds, federal and or state aid available to the district to offset costs associated with the repair and remediation. We had our attorney assist us in drafting this language. The board approved it, and it allowed us to immediately get into action and utilize anybody we could get our hands on that could actually do work, and we started issuing emergency purchase orders to get work underway. You know, once the storm cleared, we had some key personnel moved over to the our security center, which is our central command center. We designed this building several years ago as a 24/7 operation, and we knew we needed something in the district for emergency basis. Needless to say, we weren't really prepared for this type of emergency and widespread as it was, but basically we overtook the building. We took over their conference room and offices, their computers, everything to be able to manage this crisis and get us through so we could get school back open. We used that as a central location. We had a lot of our supervisors and people, you know, we would make assignments out of that central command post, have people go out, check things out, and then come back, either call in or come back to us and give us the information that we needed as we were trying to document the process. One thing, our biggest concern, obviously, was all the roofs in our district, so we hired two different roof consultants, and we split up the district, and we split them up, and we had one group doing all our high schools and support facilities, another group took care of our elementary and middle schools throughout the district, and they went in and did a very quick assessment to see what kind of immediate damage we had. But after we did that initial assessment, we actually came back in and had them do a more thorough detailed inspection just to make sure we didn't have any uplift issues with our roof membranes so that we weren't affecting any of our long-term warranties we had in place with our roof systems. Once we had our teams assemble, we had our architects go out and hit all parts of the district based on the initial assessment that was reported to us. We had operational teams out there at the buildings. Once the storm passed, one of the things we instructed our district leadership team to do is we asked our head custodian that's assigned to the building as well as our principal to report to the campus as soon as they possibly could. And then once they reported to the campus, we had asked them to start calling in over to the security center and start reporting the damage that you find. So there was no way we could get enough people to go hit 100 buildings out there from a central standpoint. We had to utilize our campus-based administrators and support staff to be able to call into the school district and be able to give into the security center, and give us the information we needed so we knew to the extent of the damages that we had. One of the things we did, we brought in the clerical staff in to help us with the documentation that needed to be done in preparation for what you would need to deal with FEMA and your insurance company and so forth. We did not have that template developed because we never expected to have this kind of disaster. And so we worked through several evenings, Pam and I, trying to come up with a spreadsheet of how we can document this damage and make it useful information and develop it. And here's a sample of the document we came up. We've actually expanded even more after we've met with FEMA and some of the information that we've had. And some of the things we've had to add is we've got an estimate or we've issued a purchase order. Has the work been completed? Have we paid the bill? Because that's some of the information that FEMA has requested from us to turn in as part of the reimbursement process. Tony's going to go ahead and talk about our Tier 1 and Tier 2 items.
What we were able to determine at this point in time is that there was a lot of damage throughout our school district, and we needed to go back and create basically the two types of tiers. Our Tier 1 process, which was, you know, the critical systems. We needed to evaluate critical systems that needed to be functional in order for us to have school. So we wanted to make sure that our building and site, we had access to those facilities. We wanted to make sure that our power, low voltage systems, our PA, fire alarms were functional. We also needed to work with all of our MUD services throughout our district and Jersey Village and City of Houston. We had boil water issues that we had to take care of. So in creating this template, we were able to go back to each one of our facilities, high school, middle school, elementary support buildings, and check off if all of these were okay for us to have school. Wet carpet, well, we'd have to pull wet carpet out if we had some, or dry it. HVA systems, HVAC systems, our communication, our data, our food service, because we had to make sure that if we get back in that specific building, we had to make sure that our food service department could prepare and bring the food to our campuses. Our roofs, as Roy mentioned, were also very critical. Canopy removal. So as you can see, all of those Tier 1 components, we were able to put it on a template, and we were able to go through and check off if everything was okay for this specific school, or we had some critical issues that we needed to take care of before we could give clearance to that campus being open for students on the day that we determined to go back. We did that for every campus. What we also came up with were a tier two system of concerns that we could, it would not keep us from opening a school or facility for students and staff, but these were things that we knew as we went through the process we were going to have to do something with. Canopy replacement. If we could at least get it cleared away, we could still work with our students and staff in getting up to a specific portable. Carpet, VCT replacement. If we had to remove it, we could go on the floor without the carpet or VCT for a while, but we were able to work through some of those things before we brought our students back on board. Ceiling tile replacement, as you saw in some of the pictures earlier. We had a number of ceiling tile that was down. We had to make sure that either we had it in our facility or our distribution center, or we had to make the process of ordering some to at least replace. But it wasn't going to really keep us from being able to open school for that specific building. Fencing repair and replacement, you saw the massive damage that we had in those areas. The removal of debris, mowing of the grounds became another concern, but we knew that we could still have school even if we didn't get to all of that. Our playground equipment and the issues that we faced there. We had to close down the playground area. That was okay until we could get it inspected so that we could have it functional again for our children. And then the signage and the damage that we had with signage. That wasn't going to keep us from getting back into our campuses or in our buildings, but that was critical for us to assess. We also had to go back in and evaluate all the electricity and water supply issues that we were facing and report back to Pam and Roy and Harold so that we would know where we stood with those types of items. We established a specific individual that was able to handle all the phone calls so that he could keep up with and coordinate all the utility concerns and questions that we had with CenterPoint Energy, the MUDs, the City of Houston, Jersey Village. That was our energy manager, which did an outstanding job during this process. We had concerns for the safety of water supply and serving our campuses. We had to make sure all those were also checked. The communications with the MUD districts, the operators, the engineer and attorneys regarding boil water notification. I say this in reference to Tier 1 and Tier 2 because this became a very critical document that we took to a principal's meeting so that they would feel extremely comfortable about this. This is what we have at your campus. These are the things that we will face or know we're good to go for your campus, but we can't do some of the things outside because of the Tier 2 concerns. We also obtained boil water notification clearances before campus could open. That became another critical concern that we had to work with. And we worked with CenterPoint, contact to prioritize restoration and electrical services at all of our facilities. This is a timeline chart that basically Roy was able to obtain and Harold and Pam that really gave us an idea of when power could be coming back on in your area. That certainly was going to affect us in our campuses and facilities. So you can see they were giving us, we think by here certain areas will be affected and should be back on by Monday. You should have this. After Monday, it's going to be this. That became very critical for us to share as well. Transportation. In this area, we also had to work with our transportation department to evaluate by team for school opening operations. In other words, what I'm getting at here is the availability of fuel. You know, we had outlying areas where our staff live, and what we're able to do was open our centers so that if they couldn't find the gasoline, the diesel, et cetera, for their own vehicles, we were going to set up an opportunity for them to come to work and utilize our own fueling stations at the centers in order to support them to get to and from work every day. And on top of that, we set up a template where they knew that they would be charged back to that fuel, naturally, if they had to go and fill up their specific vehicle, personal vehicle. Signal light outages became a very interesting process in our area, just like all over the county. We had teams go out. We got daily updates from Harris County, and we had actual teams go out and go through the different intersections because if one was not functional, that was going to create delays on our tier system of getting buses to their first school, buses to the second school, third school. So we had to make sure that through the list we were given of all the lights and intersections, we came back, we shared that with Harris County. They gave us updates daily on this one will be functional, this one may still be down. But we did that for several days on sending our staffs out. Fuel supply quantities. We wanted to make sure, again, that we had enough fuel in our reserve tanks. And how long would that sustain us if we began school again? And could we go 5, 6, 7 days? So by topping off our tanks, this supported the need of our staff, not only from our buses, but also from our white fleet that we have in the district. And then we also had to determine the route times. So we had to make sure that we were covered with our buses and our drivers to get those kids from their home, their subdivisions, apartment complexes, to a campus, and then making sure that our buses and drivers can get to the second level and the third level as far as our tiering system is concerned. As you can see, we had a number of lights that were out, signal lights that were out in our area. And I think Roy shared with me, besides just this document here, that there could have been 175, 180 intersections and lights that were damaged due to the storm. But you can see on this specific day, we had at least 132 out, and they were doing everything they could to verify and get them up and functional as quickly as they could. But you can look at all the areas that were affected in this huge hurricane issue. We also wanted to make sure, because our food service department is such a great department for us, that we had to make sure that they had power to take care of their freezers, their coolers, the preparation of their food, to make sure that deliveries could be made to all of our campuses in order to feed all of our students and staff. We have a central production facility that was up and running, and they were doing the things they needed to do in order to take care of deliveries going back to a campus as power was restored. We also had to make sure that staff availability and access to our campuses was there. Could our staff get back to us? Were they in a situation where they had more damage than some others, and how many of them would be affected in this process as well? And then we also had to make sure that food distribution to our campus and sites were taken care of with all of our delivery trucks. And I'll turn it over to Pamela.
We want to go over just a few lessons learned, because we really do feel like we have benefited greatly from the tabletop drills, from establishing the emergency plans that we had. But as someone mentioned, our original thought with these emergency plans was going to be that we were looking at either a single campus or maybe a few campuses, but not the entire school district. So after our process was completed, we went back and tried to identify some lessons learned for ourselves, and would like to share those with you as well. First, of course, I know this is not something we have to tell you, but we want to review all of our insurance policies and coverages before an event. We've decided pre-assigned staff. You mentioned that one of the biggest problems that we all had in the Gulf Coast area was not being able to communicate. Cell phones were very, very spotty. And so we've decided that we want to try to do some pre-assignment of staff. We had done some, but we believe we want to do even more of that. We've mentioned about portable generators, lighting, dehumidifiers, and blowers, and that is a critical issue, which I'll discuss in a little bit more detail in just a moment. Someone mentioned that clerical administrative assistants. We have decided that we are going to pre-assign a secretary, because I am a terrible secretary. And it took about 2 days for these guys to say, we need somebody who's professional to be able to try to help us get these templates filled out, because we were actually developing the template on the run. Now we have it, and we believe that's going to be much more helpful, because we could, at a glance, see whether or not we were going to be able to start school. With the employee call-in number by department, we want to do this reverse call-in, because we had such a difficult time that we now are going to tell all of our staff that they need to all call into the security office or to another number and have reverse call-in rather than us trying to get them right after a storm. And then, as we said, these templates, we believe, were very, very helpful, especially when Dr. Anthony got his administrative team, his district support team together. We could hand them something that at a glance showed them, are we going to be able to start school or are we not? It's been mentioned that the communication ahead of time with industry partners is critically important. Roy has a great relationship. Roy and Glenn Roden have a great relationship with the utility company. We really utilize that, we believe, to get our school district back on track a whole lot earlier than others. Roy's already really mentioned to you the other, making sure that you have contact information for all of your architects, contractors, and consultants. And then the emergency remediation service providers is once again an issue I'm going to mention to you again, because that's a huge learning that we believe that we had. And then the commodity vendors. Colleen Wells is our assistant superintendent for purchasing. And we were in a position where to be able to start school, even if we had lights on and had safety, did we have enough toilet paper? Because we didn't know that we were going to be able to get commodities in. So she was having to do that. And we know that we're going to stage more commodities to be able to do that as well. Coordination with other jurisdictions is a huge issue. One of the things prior to the storm that we had decided is we did not want to be shelter. We had been in that situation before where we were asked to be schools, were asked to be shelters. And then after we were ready to start school, we were still a shelter, and it was still a difficult time. So instead, what we had done is we had done an interlocal agreement with the county and with the Red Cross that we would use one of our facilities as a staging place for volunteers. We wanted to help. We wanted to do something. But we didn't want our campuses to end up being shelters for weeks and weeks on end. So we had already gotten some of those arrangements together. We still had some real problems, as every other school district did in the area, in terms of trying to coordinate on site with FEMA and Homeland Security. There were lots of questions about were they or were they not going to do pods. So we're going to try to make an even stronger connection with some of those groups up front. And we already did have some agreements with some school districts that are closer to the coast, where we have previously established bus sheltering and some other kinds of arrangements, and we believe that has been very beneficial. That was very beneficial prior to this hurricane. Communication, Dr. Anthony mentioned, and some of you have mentioned, is probably the most difficult challenge that we had. That first one is the key that we believe was a learning for us. We had originally thought about having our security system for security and have our maintenance center become the command post for maintenance, because that's where most of the maintenance stuff is. But we have now decided that it makes much more sense to have a single command post. Our security center does have a generator, and it was much, much more efficient for everyone, whether it was operations, facilities, Dr. Anthony, everybody to be in one place, because we could easily communicate with each other. We believe it was much more efficient and effective to do that. The issue I want to share with you, somebody asked, do we really feel like we did a good job in terms of communication? And we did have lots of parents say they got more communication from us than they did from actually other folks. We did have about, probably about 15 interviews that we had done with the media. But what was really the key was that event notification calling. We did four of those. And we continued, and one of the other lessons learned is we called immediately after the hurricane and said, clearly, you guys know we're not going to be having school. But we communicated periodically because parents were wanting to know, is it going to be tomorrow or is it going to be 2 days? So we kept on communicating with our parents and with our employees periodically so that they wouldn't be wondering what was going to happen. We also had a key communicator group list, which I'm sure many of you do, using email. We ended up sending out about 5,800 emails. We have about 2,000 folks on that voluntary key communicator group list of community members. And that doesn't count what we sent out to actually our employee group. Frequent communication is a real issue. The cell network capacity is an issue that we were very concerned about. I was about ready to throw my cell phone in the toilet. But we're going to investigate using Nextel Push to Talk and see if we can. I'm not trying to promote a particular vendor, but something so that we can. Satellite phones are another idea, because we really did have some stresses and some frustration about communication. Okay, school startup was the key question. I mean, that was what we were all working toward, is when are we going to be able to start school? And we had to struggle with, are we going to have phase startup, or are we going to wait until all the schools are able to open? And so those sheets, those templates that we showed you, really helped us to do that. We ended up losing 7 days, and we decided that we could not afford to have our students learn at least 7 instructional days. So we did make the decision to make up 3 of those days, even though that we were not required to, and to make up 1 staff development. Because those 3 days had originally been staff development days, we turned them into student days. And then we also added on 1 additional staff development day that had been on a teacher holiday. We also, though, however, believed that it was very important for us to recognize the struggles that our staff were going through. So we did ask the board to pass a resolution, and that resolution was to allow us to pay all of our employees for the days missed, regardless of whether or not they had worked. And there is a legal way for you to do that that is not a gift of public funds. What we did is have the board resolution identify that there was a public purpose and benefit to us paying our staff. We paid our staff straight time the days that they missed. And then those staff who worked, the operations staff and maintenance staff, they also were paid straight time. So the people who actually worked, who were hourly employees, in essence got double time. Those who did not work got straight time. And once again, the public purpose is that we want to make sure that we are able to get people to work the next time we have an emergency. And we also want to, of course, make sure that we have the safe contact. And it also, we believe, helped to promote retention.
Did you do the double time? Do you even know it? Previous issue? Is this something you put in place for this, or has that been policy?
That has not been policy. It was something that we struggled through and decided on for this, and we did in the resolution say we're talking about just this time. I mean, that was part of the resolution, is this is for this event. So it's not something that go forward will automatically be district policy. It would be something that we would have to evaluate given the circumstances for each event. But because we're talking about losing 7 days, it's a little different than we might not do it if we're talking about just doing 1 day. That would be up to the superintendent and board, of course. And we have for you the information about the board agenda. And I believe that is going, I'm going to, oh, 1 more slide, I forgot. This is the one that I keep telling you I'm going to talk to you about. One of the things that we did learn that we believe is critical that we'd like to share with you is that we had really good relationships established. We had that contact already with our public, with the private emergency disaster remediation services, the Blackman Moorings and the Cottons of the world. But we couldn't get them to come and work with us. Why? Because they had lots and lots of other business to do. And although we got on the phone immediately and said, we need to have you go to these 15 schools to begin water extraction, they weren't there to do it. And had we waited until they were available, we would have had a huge, huge amount of loss in our district. So what we very quickly were able to do with Roy's contacts is to purchase quite a few generators. We had already thought about this, but our thought had been originally that we wanted to have all this kind of equipment if we had a single school, or maybe even 2 schools that we had problems with. We didn't have enough equipment previously purchased to be able to handle 100 facilities that we were needing to hurry up and remediate so that we didn't end up adding additional damage to the schools. So since then, we have decided that we were going to purchase some, in fact, during the event, we purchased some additional generators, and we're going to be purchasing, not enough to just sit there and, you know, and kind of draw dust and rot, but we realized that had we not had what we had, and had we not been able to get the additional equipment during the remediation process, we would have had huge, huge loss that we ended up being able to remediate ahead of time. So in terms of facilities, we believe that we're going to have to count on ourselves to do immediate remediation. We're not going to be able to count on outside emergency disaster remediation services. And we obviously, during that process, although we did use our own maintenance and operations staff when we could finally get them, we also used outside contractors and had established that ahead of time. We established special budget codes financially to track all of our expenditures. We are a big school district, so we have lots of purchase orders. So we came up with a really high-tech system that ended up working really well. It was a yellow sticker. If the front of that purchase order had a yellow sticker on it, that meant it was an Ike. We had tried writing it on there and everything, and people missed it. So that yellow sticker became our hurricane purchase order identification to distinguish it so that our business office could help us to track that. And I'm going to turn it over to Roy, since Roy is the past president of the SECB organization, to share with you another source that you might want to look at.
If you guys don't have a disaster recovery plan in place, obviously we gave you a plan today of how you could possibly put one to be prepared. But no matter how bad you think it's going to be, think of it about 10 times worse to be better prepared for it. The Council of Educational Facility Planners in the Nashua Southern Region, after Hurricane Katrina, we wound up partnering with St. Bernard Parish in New Orleans, who had just major devastation over there with their schools and everything. And so we had a group of volunteers actually go to St. Bernard Parish, and as a result of all the efforts, a disaster recovery guide was developed by CFPI. And it's available on our website on CFPI. You can't see it very well, but it's www.cfpi.org. And if you go on there, and there's a link to the disaster recovery guide. It's an online system, which you can actually download various parts and pieces, or you can just go in each and every section and download those sections. It's a great guide. It's got some checklists in there for you. So if you have not put a plan in place, this would be a great starting point for you to look at. And this document is written in such a way, even though it's geared around Hurricane Katrina, you can use it for various other disasters out there. At least with a hurricane, you have a little bit of time to prepare. Tornadoes, you have no time to prepare, you know, fires and anything else like that. It's really good to try to put something in place and, as Harold described, practice it. Because I can tell you from our standpoint on the assessment and recovery side, going through those drills made a world of difference for us. We learned a lot of things. And even though those drills were one facility specific, we learned a lot about that particular building that we should have known about and we didn't, and it created some other issues. But then it really helped us, the process itself really enabled us to get through the storm and be able to get the district back up and running within a matter of a week and a half or so compared to some of the other districts. Even though we didn't have as big of damage areas as other districts down south of us, but it was still widespread in our district to get back and safe for our students and staff to return. So with that, we'll be glad to answer any questions that you guys may have.
Yes, sir. Any air quality issues?
Yes. With all the wet carpet we had to go in and evaluate that. And one of the things we made a decision on is if it was wet and we felt we couldn't clean it quickly, we pulled the carpet up. We didn't want to get ourselves into having any type of indoor air quality issue.
So y'all under a mandatory evacuation?
No, sir.
Okay, so I was going to ask, so the team, your administrative team probably stayed there during the hurricane, is that correct?
That's correct.
Do you have a place where you have a mandatory group to stay beside your police department?
Sort of implicit.
Yeah.
But security is mandated. In fact, that was an issue. One of their officers, I think, expressed a concern about that. And I don't think he works there anymore. I think that was the case. But they are, I think, bound at entry to know. And literally, they had sleeping bags. They slept at their facility during the entire storm. Left their homes and slept on the floor at security. Great job.
Ham sandwiches every day, cookies every day, potato chips every day. Same thing.
And there is an implicit expectation on the part of Dr. Anthony that the disaster emergency team is going to stay. So if we had thought we needed to, we probably would have been on sleeping bags at the security office as well.
And alternates. And we do have alternates that are schooled in what processes we're responsible for. Thank y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.